Welcome to the Ministry Marks podcast. My name is Thomas Majors, and I'm joined by David Haynes.
What's up, Thomas?
David, let's talk about the Ministry Marks and the Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail? What are we going to talk about today?
That's one of my favorite movies, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It is the right combination of goofiness and simplicity that I love. But I do think it gives us a topic to discuss for today. What are some things, some objects, maybe from the Bible, that we would want, or we would want to say that we've touched, we've had, that we possess in some way or another? But you got a story to go along with this,
dude,
right?
Do I ever. So I have a very close friend that I did not ask permission to share this story, so I'm going to be brief on some of the details. Oh, but don't worry, it's a really good story. So I have a friend who, when he was working on his doctorate, a number of years ago, he was researching a certain preacher. That's what his doctorate was about. This certain preacher is now deceased, I'm fairly certain. This certain preacher lived in another state, and my friend, while researching this pastor in doctoral studies, he set up an appointment with him. The gentleman that he was researching had him out to his home. This fellow went to that other state and had him out to his home. And the older preacher was very encouraging, very kind to my friend. And they began the meeting there at his home, and they were talking about certain aspects, obviously the doctoral research and preaching and all the things that he needed to discuss with him. And at a certain point, this friend of mine was told by the fella he was researching, "Well, you know, I have the stone on which Jesus sat when he preached the Sermon on the Mount."
Whoa.
That's what my friend said. He's like, "What?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "I have the stone on which Jesus sat while preaching the Sermon on the Mount." And so my friend said, "Okay, you've got to tell the story." So they went out to the backyard, and my friend was able to see the stone. I assume he sat on the stone, but he was able to see this really large rock. And so he asked the older gentleman that he was researching, he said, "Okay, tell me the story about this rock." And he said, "Well, many years ago," he said, I went to Israel." This is way back when, way back when, that this fellow went to Israel. He said it was before maybe a lot of the modern people started taking tour groups over to Israel. And he said, as he went to Israel, they did these little tours here and there. And there was a place where the tour guide said that this is where Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount. And he said it was a little mountain area, a little mount. And he said in the area, in the grassy area, there was one stone that protruded from the earth. And this preacher said, "Well, I bet that if Jesus taught right here, the Sermon on the Mount, I bet he sat on that stone as he taught the Sermon on the Mount." So they talked about that. Then the preacher from America said, "Hey, could I take that with me?"
"Hey, can I have that stone there?"
The tour guide, this is way back when, said, "Sure, sure, have at it." They said, "If you get enough guys that you're with to be able to get it dislodged from the earth and loaded into the bus, I bet you could do it." And so they went up, rock pushed, pulled, and got that stone dislodged. They loaded it into the, I guess, a large tour bus, maybe in the underside section or something like that. And then they put that thing on the plane. This was obviously pre-9/11 and all the restrictions after that. But they flew that thing back, and supposedly the stone that Jesus sat on while teaching the Sermon on the Mount is in the backyard of someone's home in America. All right, Thomas, what do you think about that story?
That is an incredible story. It's like, "Hey, look at that rock right there. How much you want for that rock?" Or somebody says, "I wonder where Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount." Oh, it's in somebody's backyard in America right now.
You know, if this friend of ours listens to this podcast, I'm sure I'm going to get a phone call and it's going to sound something like this. Haynes, I cannot believe you fell for that lie I told you. But it sure does sound good, though. So, all right, Thomas, we're going to go through three items each that we would like to have. Is the stone that Jesus possibly sat on while giving the Sermon on the Mount lecture, would that be in your top three?
It would not be in my top three.
It's not in my top three either. However, if that is a true story, they want to give it to me, I'll take it. Absolutely. I'll take it. But it's not in my top three request from Bible Days.
All right. I'm so pessimistic. You know me. You know me for a while now. I'm pessimistic.
Yeah.
I just think about, you know, grass decaying, leaves falling, just the decay and the buildup of earth over the last 2030 years or whatever it is. And so I just don't know if that rock would be visible.
I understand. And I, like most preachers, never allow facts to get in the way of a good story.
Okay. And this also reminds me of something else. You remember during the Crusades, the Roman Catholic Church sold pieces of the cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the cross that Jesus was crucified on, they sold these pieces of the cross. Little splinters of the cross. Or they said they were splinters of the cross. And I heard a historian, and I may have read it in one of the books before, he said they sold so many splinters of the cross that it could have rebuilt the ark.
That cross was the size of some of these on I-55. That is funny.
I'm a bit pessimistic, but still, we're just talking about what we would like to have.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what's your number one?
Okay. My number one is the sword of Goliath. Now, if you remember, David was probably a teenager. You and I never discussed that. How old do you think David was when he fought Goliath? 13 to 16 years old?
Yeah, I think he was a son of the law by that time. So after bar mitzvah, and I think he would have been somewhere between 13 to 16. I would put it at 16.
There you go. Okay, so a teenage David goes out to face a ferocious giant, a literal giant, sling, stone, rock, forehead, falls to his death, doesn't have a sword, uses Goliath's sword, cuts off his head. And then I love that it says that he then took the head of Goliath into like the neighboring town. I'm a deer hunter, and one of the fun things about deer hunting is after you kill a trophy buck, then you go and show it off. Well, he showed off Goliath's head like we would show off a trophy buck or a big bass that we've caught, something like that.
He laid it out on the front of his chariot, strapped it down to the front of the chariot, rode it through town.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. And then somehow the sword of Goliath wound up in the city of priests. What was that? Nob? Was that, what was the name of that city of priests where the slaughter happened? Because Nob. And so it was there, you know, David was on the run from Saul, his father-in-law, the king, who was trying to kill him. And he goes in haste. He didn't even have any weaponry. And lo and behold, he goes to the priest there. And the priest said, well, hey, all we got, really, we've got some of this showbread for you guys to eat if you've been kept from women. And then we have the sword of Goliath. How it wound up there, I'd like to know. And I think with it would come a detailed archive of where all it had been from the time that it was used to sever Goliath's head until the time it showed up in the city of Nob. And then David took it and was like, yes, there is none like it. I wonder how big it was. I wonder how large it was. I wonder what it would feel like in one's hand. Is it a one-handed sword? Is it a two-handed sword? Would I look like Conan the Barbarian whenever I hold it? You know, because I look kind of like Conan right now. And so I just have all of these questions. Does it still have some blood on it? Has it been utilized anytime after David left with it?
You kind of act like Conan the comedian sometimes.
That's right. So my number one, David's sword or the sword of Goliath. What's your number one?
Okay, my number one, I want to play the trick card.
Ooh, I didn't know to play trick cards.
So in the sense of, you know, if you, a lot of times people say, if you got a genie wish, what would be the first wish that you could wish for?
A million wishes.
A million wishes.
Of course.
And so with my first pick, I'm picking from the Old Testament.
Okay.
And I'm picking the Ark of the Covenant.
Ah, that was my number two. So I'm glad I have five answers possibly. Okay, Ark of the Covenant.
And the reason being is because...
Because of Indiana Jones.
Because of Indiana Jones, yes. Which one Indiana Jones is that? That's the one with the Germans. Right. All right, so the reason I'm picking the Ark of the Covenant is because of course, it symbolizes God's presence with the people. But what does it have in it? The rod of Aaron?
Yeah, absolutely.
The manna?
Absolutely.
The Ten Commandments?
Absolutely. What about the golden mice? And so some think, I've recently read about this, some think that every time the ark was moved, the contents were removed. And then once it was in safekeeping, the contents were replaced. And at some point in history, they decided some things weren't worthy of being in there. That's the thought.
I didn't know that. But see, I'm picking the Ark of the Covenant because it's got other things in it.
Yes.
Yeah, other things in it.
That, cheater.
No.
Cheater.
I'm getting more things because I picked the Ark of the Covenant as number one.
Yeah.
And you got Moses's rod that is in there.
Yeah. Yes. The rod that budded after it was removed and worked into a rod.
I'm calling it Moses's rod.
Oh, Aaron's rod.
It was technically Aaron's rod.
But I knew what you meant. Yes. I still love you. Don't you worry.
And I'm picking the Ark of the Covenant because it has manna in it.
Because, yes. Which was also one of my answers. Yes.
I'm picking the Ark of the Covenant because it has the stone tablets in it.
Yeah.
I'm just... picked every one of those and only have picked one thing.
Yes.
So again, that's the reason being. And there are times where, you know, it's described as this wonderful, magical type object.
Yes.
Where a person died from touching it.
Disrespect.
And then imagine it being laid with gold, the artistry that would go along with that, the preciousness of the materials. Yeah, I'm going with the Ark of the Covenant, number one.
And while you were talking about that, I did Google because I'm thinking, well, am I wrong about the golden mice? But yeah, after the Philistines were plagued because of their reception or taking of the Ark of the Covenant, then there were golden mice that were placed in there to remember when it was taken by the Philistines. But at a later date, the golden mice are no longer in there. They're no longer listed in the contents of the Ark of the Covenant. So some think that the golden mice were discarded because it was for a Philistine event or an event of the people of Philistia. So it's just an interesting thought.
Okay, so what about the Ark of the Covenant? What's your theory about what happened to it?
Okay, so I think that possibly Jeremiah, or I land on two places. A, Jeremiah was able to escort it out before the temple was destroyed way back when, BC, and then it might be in Ethiopia. I lean toward there being a secret area that during the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD that they did not know, the destroyers did not know of a secret chamber. I think it is under the Temple Mount somewhere. Is what I think. Those are my two. That's my A answer and B answer. What are your answers?
Yeah, I've always espoused that Jeremiah came and hid it, took it and hid it somewhere because he would have had an opportunity to do so. And then over in Revelation, it talks about hidden manna. And I think in Revelation, when it talks about hidden manna, I think it's referencing back to the ark and the manna that is in the ark. All right, what's your number two, David?
All right, my number two, since your number one took out three or two of mine, so here is my number two, Paul's harsh letter to Corinth.
Oh, man, that is so good.
His harsh letter. Because, dude, let me tell you, he tore Corinth apart in his nice letters. What did he say in the harsh letter? Oh, my goodness.
You grave-sucking Corinthians.
You better not come to my grave wanting my power. Oh, my goodness. But, dude, all right, so of the two, you are the scholar of this bunch by a long shot. Mr. Scholar, don't we think there were four letters that Paul wrote to Corinth?
Four letters. That's what we believe.
All right, and walk through why we think that. Why, you know, because we have 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, but then there's a harsh letter, and then there was a lost letter or something like that, or another letter that he references that is not the harsh letter. Do you remember?
Yeah, David. So we actually think that 1 Corinthians, that our book, 1 Corinthians, is actually the second letter that Paul wrote to Corinth. And then our 2 Corinthians is actually the fourth letter that Paul wrote. So there is a first letter that is lost to us. And we know that Paul wrote a letter to Corinth and he urged the Corinthians to avoid association with professing believers that were immoral. He references that in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. And then he writes the second letter, which is 1 Corinthians. And then he makes a visit, which is a very painful visit to them. And then he writes the third letter, which you're calling the very harsh, the severe harsh letter. And so he called them to repentance. He called them to urgency in discipleship, and specifically over this brother who was erring in the faith. And we know that from 2 Corinthians chapter 2, 4 through 11. Mm-hmm. So we know it's not 1 Corinthians because 1 Corinthians isn't that harsh. Mm-hmm. So there's some letter that comes between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians that we have called the harsh lost letter.
Yeah.
And it's referenced there in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 4 through 11.
And dude, if he refers to it being harsh, it must have been bad. I mean, bad. Because most preachers look back on difficulties and say, well, you know, it really wasn't that bad. Wasn't as bad. But it was harsh. I mean, what had they done? Talked about his mama, and then he had to go in there and slap their heads. Oh my goodness.
No, they didn't talk about his mama, but there was one who was having sexual relationships with his stepmama.
Oh, so yes, yeah, so I would love to read over the manuscript. You're much more skilled in Greek, so don't worry, you'll have a seat at that table. If I ever find or uncover or discover the harsh letter, I'm going to call you and you can walk through that Koine Greek with me.
Yes.
And we can read it together.
Oh, that would be so interesting.
Yeah. So Thomas, what's your number two? The item you'd like to have?
I'm just going to pick one from the Old Testament.
Yes.
I'm going with Samson, the jawbone
of a donkey.
Of a donkey.
Didn't he kill like 1,000 men with that thing?
He killed so many with it.
Yes. Yes. All right. Go ahead. Tell the story that I'm going to add one detail that you maybe have never thought of.
Yeah. So Samson, he goes to fight against the Philistines, and they get him in this tough spot, and he takes the jawbone of a donkey and he slays so many of them with that. And it becomes this legendary object, you know, within the Old Testament. And so I'm just thinking, you know, that's one of those things that I would want to show off.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
One of those weird artifact kind of things. Like, what is that? Somebody say, what is that? Is that from your favorite donkey that you had over the last few years? No, I've never had any donkeys. You wouldn't believe that is Samson's jawbone of the donkey that he killed all of those Philistines with.
Yes.
It's just one of those macabre kind of statement artifact kind of pieces.
All right, so I've only heard one sermon on this, and I heard the sermon I heard on the jawbone of a donkey. This was years ago. This was at a conference that is primarily King James only. And so it was one of those old school conferences and with old school preaching. And the guy made a big point out of what I think the King James version calls it, the fresh jawbone of a donkey. And this guy said he thinks that Samson grabbed the jaw of a living donkey and jerked his jawbone out and then went to working on the craniums audience of 1,000 people and killed them with this fresh jawbone, with now a donkey walking around saying, "Hey, how in the world am I going to eat?
I'm going to chew now."
Right. So I think KJV says fresh jawbone of a donkey. It is so interesting. So you would pick that one. Boy, that's a good one, Thomas. That's a good one.
All right, what about you? What's your number third? Third and final.
So I went with David's sword, number one. Paul's harsh letter to Corinth, number two. Number three, I'm going with the Spear of Destiny. Boy, that was a nice echo, wasn't it?
It was.
So the Spear of Destiny. Supposedly, the Spear of Destiny is what all of these world leaders have always wanted way back when, and wars have been fought trying to find this Spear of Destiny, which is supposedly the spear that the soldier used to indicate Jesus's death. Before they broke the legs, or as they were breaking the legs of the people on the cross, he stuck the spear in, blood, water comes out. Spear of Destiny.
I don't know any of the legend behind that.
No. Oh, the Spear of Destiny?
No.
You're kidding. So supposedly, that's what the Nazis were trying to do. The Nazis thought, multiple people groups throughout history have thought, he who controls the Spear of Destiny controls the world. They think that if they can ever lay hands on the Spear of Destiny, it will be a world ordering or a new world ordering tool. And so that's what Hitler was looking for while he was doing all this raiding of museums and that kind of stuff. He was looking for the Spear of Destiny because he thought he would be almost immortal with the controlling the Spear of Destiny. Nobody, I don't think it exists, but it existed, but I don't think it exists.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. That is interesting. Yeah. All right, so my number three.
I can tell you educated.
All right, so my number three, right? Uh-huh. I'm going with the Shroud of Turin.
The Shroud of Turin.
I don't know if the Shroud of Turin is the real shroud that Jesus had on his grave clothes, but for all of the reasons that people are compelled over the Shroud of Turin, I'm going with that. Because I think, you know, in that, maybe we would have an image of the resurrected Jesus.
Yeah.
We would have this cloth. I mean, I get these supernatural cloths sent to me in the mail all the time.
Oh, I see. Those you see in 1999 to all these TV preachers, huh?
So it would be amazing to be able to know that Jesus was buried in this cloth and that he was resurrected in the cloth.
Yeah.
And that he folded it and then set it to the side.
Okay, so here's a question I have for you. If you possess the Shroud of Turin, would you use it to cover the elements of the Lord's Supper before you observe the Lord's Supper?
I've never thought about that.
Well, now that you are, what's your answer?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Could we at First Baptist bar it?
Yes. Yes, y'all definitely could. All right. This is my main question. And it's been a lot of fun to talk about this. And there are so many other things that we could pick. Yeah. We could pick the nails. We could pick the crown of thorns, the cross itself. Mm-hmm. We could pick the sheet that Peter saw.
The sheet. I didn't even think about that. I was thinking in the tabernacle that was torn from top to bottom.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many other things like that. The Holy Grail itself, right?
Oh, yeah, the Holy Grail. We didn't even talk about that. This was the title of our podcast.
So, I mean, there's so many different things that would be interesting. Now, this is my question. God has preserved this world since he created it. God has preserved his word. Mm-hmm. And some of that word just think about Moses writing the Torah. It's been preserved for us for multiple thousands of years. Why wouldn't God preserve any of these things that we're now talking about?
Okay, so I think God did not preserve these for the same reason he buried Moses's body. Remember that Moses died and God buried his body. I think had God not buried the body of Moses, the people would have set up a shrine and worshiped it. And I'm afraid that if we had some of these images, they would become icons, and we would set up a memorial or a museum to some of these great things of biblical history, and we would get our eyes off of the gospel. The gospel is God's plan A. That's it. It is all about the gospel. and he wants us to keep us focused.
I agree. I think we're so twisted in our human nature because of sin that we would make a golden calf out of these things. Yeah. And people would bow down and they would worship them. They would pray to them. They would sell their life savings to be able to touch it for 2 seconds. And they would just give so much. And they would put their faith in these objects instead of putting their faith in the one who created the object or who empowered a person to use the object. Yeah, I think it's because we would worship it.
Well, Thomas, this has been a really fun discussion. And if you listen to this discussion and you thought of some other things that you would like to see or possess, hey, let us know. Tag us in a line. Let us know what you were thinking as some biblical items that you would like to see or hold. We hope to see you again next time.